Let's see, I want to see if our puppy raisers have come in. Is Vicky here? Vicky, Kathy?
Hi, I'm here.
Hello, Vicky. Good. Hi. Kathy? Is Kathy here?
Yes.
Oh, wonderful. And Jeanette?
Yes, I'm here.
Wonderful. So glad to. Oh, I'm so excited you made it. And so my name is Vita Zavoli, and I am the program chair for Golden State Guide Dog Handlers. And first, I want to thank everyone for coming today. We have a good crowd for you here, like around 30 people, because some people are sharing phone lines. So we have quite a good crowd, and they're ready. They're ready to talk to you. Thank you to Alice, who helped quite a bit in helping me get this program together, and Susan, who's always willing to listen. That's one of the things I just love about Susan. She's always ready to listen. Okay, so welcome. And then I'm going to let you introduce yourselves. Please just tell us your name, your location, maybe how many puppies you raised. Let's just start with that. So Vicky, you want to go first?
Well, sure. Hi, everybody. My name is Vicky Curley. I live in Rotunda, West Florida now, but I did live in New Jersey for just about 11 years. My family and I raised 6 German Shepherd puppies for the Seeing Eye. I absolutely loved it. I tried desperately to convince them to bring a puppy club to Florida, but I just couldn't get them to do it. So I am also a graduate of the Seeing Eye. I got my first dog from them in June of 1978. So you might as well, I guess you can say I know this from both ends of the spectrum.
Wow, that's wonderful. All right, thank you. Kathy?
Hi, my name is Kathy Hall, and I live in San Jose, California. I have been involved with Guide Dogs for the Blind for a little over 10 years. And I am on my 7th dog for them. They have all been Labradors. I hate to say it, but my favorites are the little black labs. They just are so sweet. Although I realize as a working guide, they sometimes are not quite as visible.
Okay. Hi, Jeanette. Thank you, Kathy.
You're welcome.
Hello, Jeanette.
Yeah. Hi, I'm Jeanette Gonzalez. I am also from San Jose, California. I am currently on my 3rd dog. I raised 2 dogs back in 90. I did them consecutively starting back in like 97 or 98 for Guide Dogs of America. And then now I'm on my 1st dog for Guide Dogs for the Blind. My first one was a black lab. My second was a golden retriever. And my current one is a golden retriever Labrador mix.
Wonderful. Wow. Oh, it's tough raising a puppy. So it's a lot of work. So what we did is we came up with some prepared questions, which I did send you in advance. And I'm just going to rotate and ask one of you the question, and then if there's something the other two would like to chime in with after, that would be great. All right, I am gonna start with Vicky. Let's go then. So what got you interested in being a puppy raiser, Vicky?
Well, I got my first Seeing Eye dog in June of 1978. And at that time, I lived in Cleveland, Ohio. And I just was so appreciative, of course, of the puppy raisers that worked so hard to take a 7-week-old puppy to something that could actually be a working guide And never really thought I would ever be able to do it. But the good Lord saw fit for us, my husband and I, and my family to move to New Jersey in 2005, 45 minutes away from the Seeing Eye. And so we moved there in December of 05. In February of 06, we signed up to become a puppy raiser family. My daughter really wanted, she was going to be the primary raiser, and she really wanted to raise a black lab. I got a call from our coordinator, puppy raiser coordinator, and she said, if you're willing to take a male shepherd, we could, you know, bring you a puppy right away. And I said, well, let me think about that. Yes. So we took on a male shepherd named Yogi in February of 2006. And it was just such a special thing to me, because I am a graduate, to be able to give back just a little bit, just a tiny little bit of what the Seeing Eye had done for me throughout the years. And I just loved it. And I had a little bit of an advantage because I had a working guide dog. So a lot of the places that we would go into kind of already knew what we were doing. So it made things a little bit easier, but I was so excited to be able to give just a tiny bit back to what the school had given me.
Kathy, what got you interested?
Actually, I am a retired teacher, so I spent a lot of years working with children. And when I finished, I thought I still would like to be involved in something. However, I was not interested in participating in a lot of things that teachers do with children, going back and volunteering in the classroom, et cetera. And dogs have always been a passion of mine. So I thought, what better way to use my skills and interests than working with guide dogs? So I became part of their community. Living in the San Francisco Bay Area, which is where the one campus of Guide Dogs for the Blind is located, gave me kind of a local interest or a local understanding of the school. So that was what got me started.
Mm-hmm. And what about you, Jeanette? Interestingly enough, you have a number of years between when you first started and when you took another puppy.
Yeah, that's because I got married and raised a couple of kids. So, but going back, my dad had an aunt and uncle who volunteered for Guide Dogs for the Blind. And every Christmas, their Christmas card would have the puppies. It would be the Christmas card that Guide Dogs for the Blind, you know, sold in their store. And I always look forward to that Christmas card because it's puppies. And so that was kind of my first introduction to, you know, guide dogs. And I grew up with dogs. We've always had a dog. I often joke that the hardest part about getting married was getting used to sleeping with a human and not with a dog in the bed. And I just, you know, always thought it would be kind of cool to raise. And so when I was 17 or 18, I worked at a veterinary hospital, and one of the technicians, she actually raised, even though we're up here in San Jose, she raised puppies for Guide Dogs of America, which is based down in Sylmore, so Southern California. Well, in their group, they had the whole litter up here, including the mom. The mom was owned by the leader up here, and they had one puppy left to place, and they really wanted to keep the whole litter up here. And she knew I had a slight interest in it. So she asked me, hey, would you be interested in raising this dog? And so I went home and asked my parents, and they were like, it's your responsibility. And so that's kind of what got me into it. And so I did two through them, and then got married and had my two kids. And I always knew I was going to go back to it, but I just didn't feel like I'd be able to do it well enough, while also raising kids, because I also was having to work. And so when my kids got old enough, so, they're both adults now, my daughter just graduated high school, I figured I finally have the time now to take it on. And I knew when I went back to it, I would always race through Guide Dogs for the Blind because they're closer. And I thought, you know, it's kind of keep the family tradition going with doing work with them. So that's how I got into it.
Wonderful. Wow. Such interesting stories. So Kathy, what do you find is the hardest skill or behavior to teach a puppy?
Sorry, I muted and had to unmute. You know what? This is the one question there on the list that I thought, oh my gosh, I'm going to hope someone else gets this one. I think the hardest thing for me was not so much specifically one skill, but realizing, just like children, my own children, the children in my classrooms, everyone was unique and different. And your tendency with dogs, I worked, all seven dogs that I have worked with were Labradors. Mm-hmm. In recent years, I've let a couple of yellow labs sneak in there, but they've all been Labradors. And it's easy to kind of think, oh, these are Labradors. These are Labrador traits, blah, blah, blah. And realizing that every dog was unique and different. So I had one dog whose challenge was she learned right away she was supposed to relieve outside. She didn't learn quite as quickly. She wasn't supposed to relieve in the house, nor was she supposed to relieve on a walk unless, you know, she was given permission to. So that was kind of the challenge for her. House behavior, they're young puppies, dogs, and that with one who actually ended up being what we call career changed. He just could not quite get over wanting to grab pillows. It was his love, pillows. And, you know, he would, any opportunity, he would sneak in and grab it. So it's simply remembering each dog is unique and trying to help each dog be successful.
Wow, that's wonderful. Anybody else have a skill or talent or, you know, or behavior they found kind of difficult to teach?
This is Vicki.
Yeah.
I will tell you where I had the most difficulty. It was not with my puppy. It was getting my family to be consistent with everything. I had trouble with the people. Mm-hmm. But we got through. My daughter was very good, but my husband, well, you know, if he had the task for you know, watching the puppy for a little while, oh, he would watch TV and then we would find a mess in the room. Oh, I didn't see that. So yeah, the puppies were, you know, pretty forthright, you know, but my family needed a little work. They were worth it though. They were really worth it.
Yeah. Great. So, Jeanette, what types of questions do you get when you're out with your puppy from the public?
The funny thing is the number one question I get is, am I a professional dog trainer? And I'm just like, it's funny because I have to sit there and it's not really a question I really expected, but, you know, I tell them no, and they kind of look at me like, well, you're training that dog. And so I kind of explain then what I'm doing. And I also tell them about the support I have, and that's, you know, no way would I take somebody's dog who's, you know, got issues already ingrained in them and say, yeah, I could train them. Like I mentioned, I've always been around dogs and, you know, we've always done obedience training with our dogs. So it's like, I know that part, but I can't fix your dog's behaviors. That's what I have the leaders for going to and asking. So yeah, the number one question is because people are looking for a dog trainer. And what's, you know, so now I actually have the name of the dog trainer my mom uses for her German Shepherd. And I pass that information along. And then the second thing I get asked is, what is he being raised for? And then like how old he is, are the, the most common questions I get. But the number one is, am I a professional dog trainer? And it's coming from somebody who is looking for a dog trainer.
Yeah. Kathy or Vicki, would you like to add?
I think the funniest question I've gotten asked is somebody asked me, are you training that dog to be a blind dog? I sure hope not. But no, I haven't, you know, mainly what Kathy said, you know, what's the dog being? For me, if I didn't have my working dog, then sometimes I'd be asked that. But most of the time, because I had my working dog also with me, people pretty much knew.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So, Kathy, what type of support have you received that's been helpful to you as a puppy raiser?
I was going to say, Jeanette alluded to this. So for me, when I started, like I said, over 10 years ago, there was a certain amount of you know, feeling that I was reasonably competent raising a dog. I've always had dogs, had some challenging breeds as well. And so when I went to my first guide dog meeting and saw all these dogs walking on loose leashes and not jumping on each other and just, you know, the whole thing, I was kind of like, oh my gosh, I'm not sure I can do this. But guide dogs has a multi-tiered support system. So one of the things that you do is you attend a puppy meeting. So you go to this meeting where there are people who are have been raising dogs for years or people who are just starting like yourself. And then there's a volunteer leader. So again, not professionally trained, but someone who generally has been involved for a while. And from there, there is a liaison person with guide dogs who is trained and who has a strong background in dog behavior, training, et cetera, that can come and help you if you have an issue. And they are a wealth of knowledge and have access to other resources as well. So there's a lot of support personnel wise. And then Guide Dogs furnishes each of us with, they call it a puppy manual, but it is a collection of documents that give you kind of step-by-step guidance on how to teach a particular skill or help a puppy develop a certain behavior. And there are videos so you can watch someone doing it. So there's really a wealth of resources so that you don't feel all alone and out there. And when you run into a problem with your dog, you go, ah, what am I going to do? Or the plus side, when you are successful and you've accomplished something, there's a bunch of people that are there to listen and say, yay, good for you guys. So it really is a very hands-on group.
Mm-hmm. Great. Vicki, any thoughts or Jeanette?
Yeah, the situation that we had at the Seeing Eye is very similar. We had puppy meetings every month that would include working with obedience, doing distraction type work. There would also be, especially for the smaller puppies, before we would start some playtime so they could get some of the yayas out. But we had leaders in the group that were there to, you know, to be helpful for whatever we might face. We had a manual, just as Kathy shared. And we did other events as well, you know, going to the mall, going to a movie with the puppies, going to play miniature golf, all kinds of fun stuff where there was sometimes more than just your puppy club involved. We would also do parades because it was a good chance to get the puppies socialized to an environment that was a little more crazy, but also get the seeing eyes presence known. And we would have several events throughout the year where some of the seeing eye instructors would come. And especially for the kids, the puppy raiser kids would get awards for, their dog not only performing well in obedience, mm-hmm. but being friendly, being well-groomed, the all-around full picture of, you know, that puppy getting ready to go off to, as they like to say, college, which is their formal training.
Mm-hmm. I like that.
It's fun.
Jeanette, do you encounter issues like access issues, like trying to bring your puppy into a restaurant?
I know when I raised 20 some years ago, there was a little bit because it wasn't common that you saw a dog out, you know, other than going for a walk in your neighborhood. I say it's a blessing and a curse now that people seem to take their dogs everywhere and there's more dog friendly places because you don't get questioned as much. And I kind of feel like when I walk in with my dog and he's got the guide dogs for the blind, it's a green jacket. So he's got his jacket on. And so people just automatically assume probably that he's some kind of service dog. They don't even take the time to read the jacket. But I think there's just that assumption because he's wearing a jacket. There have been a few places where I have gone where I've sent an email or called them just to make sure, because here in California, there's no laws that protect a service dog in training, meaning that they are not a place of business could refuse letting him in. And so places where it's like, I'm kind of planning an all day event where I would like to take him. So one has been a museum. A second was Descanso Gardens down in Southern California, where I didn't want to be all prepared, show up with him and be denied entrance. And he was allowed at both places. You know, they're just like, when you get your tickets, just let us know you have him, and that kind of stuff. So, but taking him, I mean, we've gone to movie theaters, restaurants, the malls, multiple different stores, and I haven't had any pushback. And I think that's just one, a lot more places are pet friendly, and two, he's wearing his jacket, he's well behaved, he's not giving, you know, he's not really causing attention to himself. And so I think people just assume he's a service dog of some kind.
Kathy or Vicky, you want to add to that?
I have an advantage because I do have the working guide dog.
Right.
And so in most cases, you know, what the seeing eye teaches you to do is to go in and ask permission of any place of business. You know, we're raising this puppy to be trained by the seeing eye. We have a little ID card that has the puppy's name on it and the seeing eye and that information. I've had some places of business tell me I couldn't come in unless I bring both my working dog and our puppy. if I was accompanied by them, I'd be allowed to come in. But one of the other things too, that's really important, the little puppies, there's always that chance of a little mishap. So we carry a very detailed, what we call cleanup kit, that has disinfectant, wipes, everything to possibly deal with paper towels, you know, just whatever you need to take care of a little mishap. As the puppies get older, they can take on more, difficult environments. But the key is to keep it as positive as possible, so that not only is the puppy getting a positive lesson, but the people who are around you in the public places are seeing nothing but a well-behaved puppy having a whole lot of fun. And we've actually encouraged people to raise puppies because of how well the puppy behaved and learned and a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. So, Kathy, both Jeanette and Vicki mentioned various places they've taken their dogs to socialize them. Where have you taken your dog?
I was going to say mine is probably very similar. Again, as Vicki said, you're kind of taking into account the age and the skill level of the puppy that you have. But we certainly have been to malls, a wide range of stores. We have been to plays, live performances, kind of the obvious ones, banks, post office, any place that I go, and I live alone, so I'm not actively involved, you know, with children going places or things like that. So any place that I might want to go, I take my dog. Public transportation is another biggie. So we go on the light rail, which is similar to any sort of kind of tube sort of thing. It's a little quieter. There's not the clicky clacking, etc. And so light rail, buses, and then on the train. I have not done overnight trips on the train, but I have certainly taken the train from here to San Francisco. And invariably, the dogs just get on, lay down, and that's it until we get off at the other end. So I've tried to take them lots of places that would offer experiences that they might encounter as a working guide. The other thing too is realizing that, at least for the younger dogs that we're working with, going into one store might not be quite the same as going into a different store. So kind of giving them repeated opportunities in slightly different settings for similar experiences. So,
Very good point. Yeah. Have any of you had the opportunity to introduce your dogs to other household pets?
Yes. I had, when I lived in New Jersey, we had a farm. So not only did my puppy get introduced to other dogs and cats, but we also had horses and alpacas. So they got to meet all kinds. And then we were not far. We lived in the horse country in New Jersey, and there were cows and chickens. And so our pups really got very accustomed to not just your normal household pets, but quite a few other interesting things. Now, the Seeing Eye also has a farm very close to where the campus is located, so they can always get somebody that kind of socialization should they need it. But yeah, we were definitely a multi-animal family.
Wow. Okay. Kathy or Jeanette?
Yeah, we have a little mini zoo in my house. So we have a 16-year-old cat, a guinea pig, a parakeet, a gecko, and two different types of turtles. And I think that's it. And a partridge and a pear tree. And so, I mean, all of those, Marley, my current dog has been around since day one, and he's done very well with all of them. He gets sometimes a little playful with the cat. The cat wants nothing to do with him. The way we have our house set up, the cat has the back of the house most of the time. So has his privacy away from the dog. And then I do have a neighbor who has, she actually has a canine companion dog. So she has her retired one and her current working one. So Marley has had the opportunity to meet both of them along with a couple other dogs. So he's been around everything but farm animals. So that's one thing I do want to get him exposed to before he goes back to college. just mm-hmm. because it may be something that he encounters. And so I'd like to him mm-hmm. to at least have some experience with that.
Yeah. Kathy, anything to add?
Mine is very standard. I have always had a dog of my own. So my first guides had the experience of being around my first puppies had the experience of being around what we call a novel dog. So the dog I had was a mutt, but she did not look at all like a Labrador. So that was interesting. Currently, I have a retired guide that I adopted, and he is a black lab. So the puppies I raise now, they're looking at another Labrador. So nothing really unique as far as unusual animals that they are exposed to on a regular basis. Again, trying mm-hmm. to get out when you have an opportunity to greet a horse or see more novel dogs out on the street, we always try to take advantage of that. Not greeting directly, but giving them the opportunity to at least recognize it, kind of see the smells and realize it's nothing to be concerned about.
Wow, okay. I'm gonna ask all three of you this question. So I'll let Vicki go first. One of the things I think people think about a lot is you bring a puppy in your home and you give them all of this love and training, and then you need to give them up. How difficult is that? What goes through your mind? What feelings what would you like to share with us about that? I'll start with you, Vicki.
Well, the perspective for me was a bit different. I got my first dog in June of 1978, and I had already established an appreciation for the puppy raisers. Now, the Seeing Eye is a little different than some of the other schools in that they don't encourage interaction between puppy raisers and graduates. So I never actually got to meet my dog's puppy raisers, not until a few years ago. But I always had such an appreciation for what they did. So then when we got our first puppy, this male shepherd named Yogi at 7 weeks, and he just became such a part of our lives. And, we knew what the goal was. And obviously, when we took him in, we knew the day would also come that we would have to say goodbye. But the goal was, I want to do the best I can to make him as ready as possible for the next step of his journey. So when the day came, he was, he was 18 months. Yeah, around 18 months when he went back. And I'll never forget, the puppy raiser coordinator came to our home, and she's never in a hurry. She doesn't just come grab the dog and go. Of course I kept it together, and we had gotten him a toy. He walked to our puppy coordinator's car with toy in mouth, and all I could think of was, he's ready. He's ready for his next steps. Of course, I proceeded to go upstairs to my room and cry. But that's okay, because absolutely, I appreciate it from the graduate perspective as well. I actually got to see him 7.5 years later. Oh. That's really cool. And just as a real quick, interesting thing, not long after he went back for his training, my current dog was going to have to retire. I ended up in class, and I was matched with Yogi's brother.
Oh, wow.
So it was just really incredible. It was really great. But mm-hmm. There were tears, but
yeah, of course.
Very mm-hmm. happy to see them moving on to what they were meant for.
Kathy?
I was going to say, and I have to sort of give a little nod sidebar to Vicki. My first dog was a black lab named Yogi.
So wow.
Kind of connected with the name and the fact that you had hoped to get a black lab. And Yogi did go on to become a working guide. He retired. He actually is retiring this year in another couple months. So pretty impressive. But Guide Dogs for the Blind is a little bit different, as Vicki said, in that prior to COVID, so we all know how COVID impacted some things. Prior to COVID, they had a public graduation where all the dogs graduating from a particular class went through a ceremony. The puppy raisers were invited to speak at the ceremony and hand over the puppy that they raised to the graduate. And so that was something to look forward to. But when I took those puppies back, which again is a little bit different in that we took them to Guide Dogs for the Blind prior to COVID, we walked in, dropped them off. My first one, I handed over to a tech at Guide Dogs campus. And this was Yogi. And you know what? He looked at me, looked at the guy, took off and never looked back. He just broke into tears. I mean, horrible sobbing. I thought, I'm going to quit coming up here because it's so embarrassing, you know, crying. People thought, you know, I'd chop my hand off or something. Anyway, but Yogi, you know, happily went on to what was going on with him. And again, lots of tears. But when I saw him 4 or 5 months later, after he had completed, you know, his advanced training and training with his handler, one, he hadn't forgotten me and he was so excited to see me again. But the most amazing part for me, and I'm choking up a little bit right now, and this is over 10 years later, was to see that little wiggly puppy that I had started with. We went out to dinner after graduation, and I saw that dog that I raised. Again, sorry, lead his partner, you know, through a parking lot where construction was going on. The barriers up. He led him into the restaurant. He laid down under that table. Curbs. He did curbs. It was just amazing that this little puppy was now such a confident leader. And of course, when you hear the appreciation from the current partner with your guide, it's just amazing Yogi worked with Jim and how much Jim appreciated having Yogi. Yogi was Jim's second dog. So I think that is the big takeaway for me. And I sort of babbled on about that, but I had that chance to see how important or what a significant contribution Yogi made to Jim's life. And again, gave me that opportunity, you know, to help raise additional dogs to try to achieve that same goal. So it's the tears and the crying. I did the same thing at my children's weddings. But you also are so proud that your dog has gone on and achieved the goal that you had started out for him. You wanted to see him become a working service dog, and he did. So it's a mixture of emotions.
That's beautiful, Kathy. Yeah. Jeanette, your thoughts?
One way that I just kind of look at it is I'm not giving them up. I'm giving them forward. And with the two dogs that I've already returned, my emotions were different for each one. For my first dog, who was a black lab, his name was Navajo. He absolutely loved working. And so it was, you know, I was confident that he was going to make it. And then going to his graduation, meeting the gentleman that received him and hearing about all these plans that he now had, all this travel he was going to be able to do that he hasn't been able to do because Navajo was actually his first guide dog, you know, it's just kind of makes it worth it, makes the tears worth it. Cause it's, I mean, you get attached to them. How do you not, you know, you have them for 8 weeks or not. I'm sorry. You get them at 8 weeks. You have them for all this time. They go with you everywhere. And then they're gone. So it's just kind of like you get that attachment, but seeing the success definitely made it worth it. My second dog was career change for medical reasons, but I honestly don't think he would have made it because he just did not enjoy working. He was very well behaved, but you could see he just didn't like it. And then now I have Marley. So we'll see how that goes. And I know his time is coming up. He'll be 13 months in a couple of days. And so then I always, you know, it's funny because all my coworkers are like jokingly trying to get him to fail so he doesn't, you know, graduate or not fail. Career change. Sorry. Let me word that correctly. And I just tell him, I was like, but when I return him, I'm just going to get another one. We'll do this all over again. And kind of like what Kathy talked about, seeing the confidence that these dogs give their new handlers and how they really give their handlers the independence. Again, talking about my friend who has, you know, granted it's not a guide dog, but her canine companion dogs. If she didn't have her canine companion dog, she would not be able to live independently with her husband, who is also wheelchair bound. You know, so it's just knowing that you're helping in a small way to give somebody independence. It kind of, I don't want to say it lessens the tears any, but it's definitely bittersweet and, you know, it makes it worth it.
Wow. So I know I jumped around a little bit on the questions here. I want to give some time for people to ask questions from the audience. And before we go there, there's nothing I could say to express our huge, huge, huge appreciation for what you do. What you've done, what you will continue to do. You know, I myself am on my fourth dog, and I just can't imagine all the work that goes into raising a puppy and then having to give them up. And but you are right. They go on to really help people, really make a difference. And it's because of you. And we really appreciate that. So before we can start, we did get some questions in advance from the audience. So someone asked, do you think like a blind person when you raise your puppy? So I'm going to ask Vicky this question.
Oh, no, I sure don't. Yes, and in fact, I've worked with my own puppy club, which was called Four Paws to Freedom, was the name of our puppy club. And there were some things that they had shared that was very helpful for me to share, because one of the problems that we had run into is that the sighted puppy raisers were kind of using eye contact to try and get the dog's attention. And I shared with them that may or may not be possible with a blind or visually impaired handler. And that would be something you would want to not do. It's just kind of a natural thing for them. And the other area, the other area that was a problem was I noticed as we were doing our obedience with the dogs, the puppy raisers would be going to their puppies to get their attention. And I shared with them that that is a problem because we constantly get that in the general public from people on the street doing their best to distract our dogs, not thinking or not caring about the fact that they are working with us as a team. So this was the kind of thing that was very helpful to our puppy club and other puppy clubs that had blind and visually impaired raisers, as a part of the process there. Because it's just things that a sighted person would just never necessarily know about. So I think having, you know, and learning how to think like a blind person as much as it's humanly possible, has been helpful for our clubs. And leaders have also learned some of these things and carried them back to their own clubs as well.
Kathy, Jeanette?
I would say, I mean, I know that there's certain commands that we don't use because they're what we would refer to as sighted commands. So we don't teach the dogs, and this is just speaking for Guide Dogs for the Blind. I don't know how other clubs do it. We don't use commands like drop it or leave it, because usually you're using those because you see them having something in their mouth or you see them distracted by something. And so obviously we're, you know, with the visually impaired person, if they may not be able to see that the dog has something in their mouth or is going for something. So we don't have the dogs rely on those commands. And I think just one thing I keep in mind when I'm taking my dog out for socialization is, you know, where is a visually impaired person going to go? And pretty much they're going to go anywhere, you know? So it's like, I don't say, oh, well, they're not going to go see a play because they may not be able to see, you know, the stage or a movie, you know. One, they may have some vision where they can enjoy that. Two, they may be going with family, they could hear, you know, so pretty much they're going to go anywhere. So I don't let, you know, that limit, I guess, the socialization. I just imagine that a visually impaired person is going to go anywhere that I am going to go. And so I just try to keep that in mind to get the dog out and socialize anywhere and everywhere.
Very true. And someday we're going to be driving those cars too.
Or getting a ride from a car without a driver in it.
Right. Kathy, anything to add?
I guess the one thing that I might add is a little bit about at home kind of things, in that I find myself occasionally stepping around a dog. And realizing that depending again on the level of sight that a person might have, that dog needs to move out of the way. So that was something someone mentioned to me early on. And so kind of getting the dog to scoot out of the way when I'm walking around, or the one that, as I said, I have this retired guide that is now mine. He all of a sudden has started laying down right behind me at the sink. And I go to turn around and I go, oh my gosh, there's a dog there. So trying to help the dogs understand that they need to move out of my way and not me go around them. So that's one of the things. And the other one is kind of thinking, because we were working on it, but the come cue, getting them to come in so that you can reach down and get them right close to you and not have to kind of, you know, fumble around. So we do work on, you know, coming close enough that I can feel you or find you easily, but please don't run me over.
Very good.
Before so just real quickly, I just wanted to say a couple things. So with regard to the come, one of the things that Seeing Eye teaches the puppy raisers to do is to do it in the same way. So the dog will come and sit at your left side, and then obviously you know that the dog is there. The leave it command is obviously not done with eyesight, it's done with audio. So if you hear something that like a dog barking as you're, you know, you can leave it. It's not actually a correction as much as it's a reminder. And also the other thing is the go to your place, so that we, like, for example, in my home, I had one particular area that my puppy would lay when we were in the kitchen. And that was where my puppy had to go. And then once they go into class, that's taught a go to your place command. So there's one place, you know, the puppy will be, they will not be behind you or anywhere where you could end up on your head. So mm-hmm. those are the things that really make a big difference with regard to not having to be concerned about those things.
Mm-hmm. Very good. All right, Rob, do we have any hands?
We do. Written? We have an iPhone user with a hand raised.
And can I please ask, quick, please don't explain your whole story. Just quick questions so we can get a few people in.
Okay. It's Judy, Rob.
Oh,
right. Vicki, this particularly for you. How do you feel about Seeing Eyes policy of not letting handlers be in touch with their razors? And from the others, I'd like to know if you think your policy should be different. So basically, should Seeing Eye adopt GDB's policy, Vicki?
You know, it's way back when Morris Frank was the pioneer of the guide dog concept here in the United States. Basically no contact policy was put into place in a time where blind and visually impaired people weren't quite as considered as equal. It was, you know, just one more person that a blind or visually impaired person was forced to thank and grovel to, so to speak. I understand that for that time, times have changed. Things are quite different now. What I would like to see is I would like to see Seeing Eye adopt a as interested policy. In other words, if both Puppy Raiser and Graduate would like to be in touch, then that should be, you know, certainly their choice. It should be a choice. But I also feel that it has to be this choice on both parts, not just the Graduate, mm-hmm. but the Raiser as well. Mm-hmm. It's such a difficult time in training. I personally, and let me emphasize this is my personal opinion. I am not a fan of a graduation in that you've just received this dog, sometimes even less than 2 weeks earlier, and the dog is still getting used to you. And then you reintroduce someone that the dog absolutely loves. And I've heard, you know, all kinds of stories, good stuff, but, you know, this is just my thinking on this. I have, you know, this day of internet, it's not so terribly hard to find puppy raisers. And I have been in touch with my last several dogs, puppy raisers, and I absolutely love it. So yes, the long and short of this answer is I would love to see Seeing Eye change their policy to a, yes, I would like to, it's my choice type thing on both sides.
Right. And I think that is what GDB does. Is that right?
Yes. Kathy? Yes.
Yeah.
It's mm-hmm. an optional thing. When you are filling out the paperwork when your dog is going back on recall, you have the option of saying that you would like to be contacted or be in contact with the Graduate and include your information, and then Guide Dogs gives the option to the Graduate mm-hmm. as to whether they want to initiate or be involved with the puppy raiser.
Okay, thank you. Next question, Rob.
Charlene.
I guess it's me, Charlene Wills. First of all, for now I don't remember your name. That's terrible. The one who took the dogs to Descanso Gardens. Just a quick joke.
Jeanette.
I wonder. Yeah, Jeanette.
That was
thank
me.
You.
Yeah.
Yeah, I want to know how he reacted to the peacocks strutting around there.
We actually did not see them this time around. This was just a couple of weeks ago, so it was still like colder weather.
Oh, yeah, yeah. They wouldn't be out then.
Yeah, okay. Unfortunately. But he did see the koi fish and some of the ducks, and he was just kind of like, those are interesting. you know, so yeah, that was pretty much it, but no peacocks. That would have been definitely interesting.
Okay. But my other question for all three of you, and thank you so much for taking your time to chat with us. This has been very informative. I don't like graduations, by the way, and I've had six successful dogs, hoping for my seventh very soon. I hope. but I would like to know what you as puppy raisers do about jumping, because one of the dogs that I received and unfortunately was unable to keep because of this was a jumper, and she would run at other people, even in harness and with a leash, and jump on them. She was very friendly. She wasn't meaning it as aggression, but it was, you know, the one person was a child, and fortunately nobody was hurt or anything, but she would run at me from behind and leap on me without me knowing what was happening. I wonder if you, any of you, have had experience and how you dealt with it. Thanks.
This is something that I've dealt with because I did also go to a dog training school. So I was taught how to be a professional trainer. So I've not experienced that with any of my guides. However, I have experienced that with students' dogs. And what I have them do is I have them keep a leash or even what we call a tab, which is a very short leash, on the dog at all times, which gives you something to hold on to, so that when the dog even gets you from behind, you can reach, grab that tab, and give that snap release and put the dog in the seated position. That works for the most part the best. I also do, if it's an ongoing problem, I also had my students do extra obedience within any given day. I would also have my students set up meet and greets where the dog would actually have someone that they might be inclined to jump on, which gives you a chance to actively correct and put them in a seated position. Some people will also say, well, turn your back on the dog, but what you described, I think, is it Charlene? what you described was that your dog would jump on your back. So that may or may, you try what works, and there's not ever just one way to get something accomplished. Mm-hmm. But yeah, having that leash that you can grab a hold of, and the biggest issue is if your dog is loose in harness and leash jumping on people, then the biggest thing for you is to be able to regain control as quickly as possible and put your dog back into that seated position.
Right. Okay, so we only have 3 more minutes. So I'm sorry, this is more of a trainer related question, and I would say maybe ask your school, because different schools will also have different views on this, so that would be my suggestion there. Do we have another question?
Margie has a question.
Okay, Margie, is it kind of a global question?
Hi there, thank you so much, all three of you. Hello, Vicky.
Hi.
Kids in my first thing I class 41 years ago. I just appreciate puppy raisers. I don't care who you, what school you volunteer for, but I don't have a question. I have 2 things that would be really helpful to consider. And if your school doesn't allow it, they don't allow it. One thing is after the puppy's adjusted, when they're relieving, relieve them on leash and make them stand still. I just got a dog in July. This dog loves to play fetch, but I can never find the toy. He brings it back and drops it, and the ball rolls everywhere. So think in the way of a blind person, but thank you so much for what you guys do. What a dedication of love and unselfishness.
Yes. And another question, Rob?
Tony.
Am I unmuted?
Yes.
Okay, just a cute, fun story. One of the schools taught the word hurry now for the dog to relieve. And a woman was shopping with her 4-month-old puppy. She was in a store and she said, well, I've got to hurry now. So the dog squatted and peed. And she said, the dog knows the command, just not quite the place yet.
Oh, my.
Any other hands, Rob?
Shana?
My question is, how do you know whether a dog is meant to be a guide dog, and how early would you discover that?
Great question. Well, I'm going to ask Kathy first. So I just want to give everybody a chance to talk.
Well, you know what? It shows up pretty soon. You quickly learn, one, whether the dog is willing to respond to a handler and direction. In general, by the time they're getting close to a year old, it's becoming fairly clear whether they're a dog that really wants to go on and become a working dog, enjoys the training, most of them enjoy the being out, but enjoys responding and working with their handler. And I'm going to let it go at that, so I'm not taking too much time.
Jeanette or Vicki?
I agree with Kathy. You could kind of just tell in how the dog is responding to what you're asking them to do. So kind of going back to where I said the golden retriever that I raised, he was a very well-behaved dog. When I would take him out, he was still very well-behaved, but I could just see it in him that he just did not enjoy it. The only time he enjoyed going out was at the time my dad was a meat manager, and we would go to the grocery store my dad was at. And it wasn't even the fact that my dad smelled like raw meat. It was just seeing somebody that he knew, that he would get excited. So you could just kind of tell with the current dog I have now, he sees me, he knows when I'm starting to get ready, and suddenly he is glued to my side. Like, you're not going to go out and have fun without me type thing. And so you could just kind of, I agree with Kathy, just how, you know, how they respond when you're asking them to do their job.
Mm-hmm. So it is 3:33. We can, so we went over time. Are there still hands raised?
Christy has a question.
Okay, Christy, is it a question?
It's a statement. It's a very quick statement. Okay. Can I just say that my last three guide dogs all retired with their puppy raisers?
Oh, that's wonderful. All right. Well, we can't thank you enough for giving up part of your Sunday. I know that's not easy to join us and tell us your stories. I mean, this was absolutely fabulous. We learned, we listened, and hey, what can I say? I know I speak for everybody here that the puppy raisers for us are like, you know, the goddesses angels that you are there. Yeah.
Angels.
Goddesses, you know, it's just amazing the work that you do. Really is absolutely amazing and beautiful and loving, you know. Yeah. Bottom line is, it's really loving and a selfless job that I know you don't get paid for.
We get paid in puppy kisses.
Yeah, that's true. So we appreciate all you do. And thank you so much again. I may reach out to you at another time for another program. If it's okay, I might reach out in the next year and see if there's, you know, something else we could do. That would be wonderful. And
it's, I think, always a lot of fun to talk about puppies.
And I think you've made a real difference today. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Bye, Jeanette. Bye, Kathy.
Bye.
Thank you.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.